On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. You're tuned into On the Radar this Tuesday, the 27th of May, 2025. And yes, many are back at work today. So whether you're tuning in from home, the road, or the heart of your hometown hustle, well, welcome to the show. And as always, we are coming to you live from the studios of Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and it's my pleasure to walk with you through the stories shaping our nation, from key national developments and policy shifts to the everyday issues affecting our communities and our natural resources. Now today, our spotlight turns north to the Kunene region, where the Opuo annual trade fair is in full swing. This year's theme, empowering the local economy through sustainable innovation in green hydrogen, oil and gas, conservancies for tourism and mining, captures Namibia's drive toward a future built on innovation, sustainability and shared prosperity. We'll be unpacking what this theme means in practical terms for small businesses, regional development and Namibia's place in a rapidly evolving continental economy. Now we'll also reach out to entrepreneurs as well as economists to speak about the event like this fair and how they can help bridge the gap between local ambition and national transformation. So stay tuned for an insightful solution-oriented edition of the show. And don't forget, you can stay connected with Eagle FM anytime, anyway, via our mobile app, our official website, all by tuning in to your nearest FM frequency, your real-time headlines and news alerts. Subscribe to the Eagle WhatsApp channel. Now let's get into it. This is On the Radar. Namibia's tourism industry continues its steady recovery ahead of the peak travel season. Hospitality occupancy stood at 54.94% in April 2025, its highest for the year, slightly below last year's 58.19%, but above pre-pandemic levels of 2019. Seasonal travel is gaining pace with a 24.1% rise in occupancy from March to April. Coastal areas led with 60.79%, boosted by the Easter holidays. Northern and southern regions followed, while the central region remained the lowest at 44.41%. Holidaymakers made up over 95% of April's bookings. Business travel remained low at just around under 4%, though the coastal area saw a bump thanks to visitors linked to the energy sector. Fly Namibia's resumed flights to Rhodes are expected to aid access to business travelers. International arrivals were led by Dutch region, Germany, Australia and Switzerland, making up 40% of visitors. Local tourism dipped to 19.3% after March Easter spike. New campaigns now target markets in Asia, the UAE and North America as part of a broader $51.3 million development push by the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. Now, tourism is projected to grow by 5.5% in 2025, with earnings expected to reach $4.6 billion. Key focus areas include visa reform, better air links, and sustainable tourism standards to ensure lasting growth. With this, we've reached out to Sonny Nurpesh, who's in the industry of tourism, to actually educate us furthermore. Good afternoon, Sonny Nurpesh, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Namibia's tourism industry continues its steady recovery ahead of the peak travel season. April saw the highest occupancy rate of the year so far. What's your take on the current recovery pace in Namibia's tourism sector?
I think if you look at the recovery from the pandemic period until now, there is definitely a steady growth. Every year around the same time, if you compare it with the previous year, there is a good increase.
Yeah.
And I think that's good for the industry if it's a steady and slow growth rather than a sudden jump, because then it can create a lot more uncertainty and people are not ready for it. Mm-hmm. So I think this switch has been very good so far. The arrivals from Europe have increased. Obviously, other countries will increase when the peak season comes in. Mm-hmm. So far it's looking very positive.
Mm-hmm. The central region continues to lay behind. Now, what do you think perhaps could be the reason for this, for the central region lagging behind compared to other areas in attracting tourists?
Well, tourism, obviously, they come to Namibia, they land in Windhoek, and they immediately travel to other places. Yeah. And that has been a usual problem over the years, where there is nothing keeping them in central region, if you look at it. People arrive here, they stay one night, go to Sossusvlei, Tosha, Sokgemunde, travel around the company, come back one night, and then they leave.
Yeah. So I guess Windhoek is not really pulling people to actually
see. It's not keeping people here, unless they come here for conferences or specific reason.
Okay, now holiday travel still dominates the tourism space. What more can be done to attract business and conference travelers all year round?
I think obviously the answer is conferences and more events, but also better planned events. A lot of times we don't plan events considering what else is happening in the country. I think NIPDB and the new MICE, which is Meetings, Incentives, Conferences and Events Department, they are looking at a better way to kind of centralize all of this and work on it where there are bigger events throughout the year, and not just a couple of, you know, different phases of the year. And then nothing happens for 2 weeks, and then suddenly there are three events at once.
Meanwhile, the Dutch countries remain Namibia's top tourist source. Do you think the new push towards Asia and North American markets will diversify arrivals meaningfully?
Absolutely. They will help. But obviously, traditionally, the Central European region has been the strongest tourism customer of Namibia. And I think that's where usually the revival looks at. India, China, Asia, there are more tourists coming, but it's still not a lot. Obviously, with the visa, even though visa regulations have changed, the tourists from Asian countries still need a visa before they arrive. And that's a longer process. So that is a challenge.
There's been some concerns in regards to the arrival, to the visa on arrival, with people complaining that it takes longer hours, even up to 4 minutes, to actually clear one client. Is that the actual fact that is on ground, would you say?
4 minutes is normal. I think some people saying it's taking between 2 and 6 hours, which is a long time, and I think that's inaccurate in the sense that it's not all the tourists that are being stopped.
Yeah.
The ministry said 70,000 tourism visas or e-visas were applied for. And from 70,000, maybe a handful might have had delays, but it's not reflective of any issues or delays or cancellations for sure. Just to give you an example, last week a few people who arrived, I was at the airport. They didn't even know about the e-visa. They just arrived at the airport, applied for the visa, and they were out immediately. So I don't think it's a big issue. It is happening to a few people. The one thing ministry needs to do is identify why it's happening, or why to certain countries or in certain situations. Maybe it's documentation, but it's not like a whole plane full of people have to wait 4 hours. Definitely not.
Okay.
Maybe a couple of people from each plane might have some issues because of paperwork or documentation.
And also because everything is still relatively new. Maybe that's
exactly.
Okay. Now, tourism is expected to grow by 5.5% this year. Do you believe this is achievable? And what challenges might
slow down? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's also actually very conservative figures. I feel it will grow a lot more, especially because some other countries are seeing decline in tourism, like America and other places.
Yeah.
And people who do want to travel will look at places that don't have conflict. People will look at places that are peaceful, safe. And Namibia does definitely tops the list on a lot of those places.
Yeah.
So I feel we'll definitely see a bigger increase. But 5.5 is a good conservative number, and there's a growth. At the end of the day, there is definitely a big growth.
So what would you say is one of the main reasons tourists still find their way or making their way to Namibia? And what's that thing that we still have to continue maintaining so we can keep attracting them?
I think safety. Peace, like we don't have crime. Again, we have a little bit of crime.
Yeah.
And last year it went up a bit. And I think it was addressed a lot. So the crime has gone down significantly, although still remains, but when people compare it to other countries, definitely Namibia is one of the safer places. Politically, it's stable, economically stable. It's kind of pure, untouched nature. So I think a lot of things are going for Namibia. And if we continue doing that and, you know, prioritizing that over other things in for tourists, definitely it will help. And that has been one of the biggest reasons that Namibia is still increasing in popularity compared to others.
Good. Now, recently, we've heard of tourists come to Namibia and get lost, perhaps when they went mountain hiking or and stuff like that. Thankfully, a recent case of a man who had gotten lost had actually been recovered. What would you say is tourists or guiders themselves should put in place to ensure that this doesn't become a thing of the norm and doesn't scare other visitors away from coming to Namibia?
I think a lot of people come to Namibia for adventure, and they know the risks involved. And a lot of tourists come as self-drive. They don't have a tour guide or a tour company. They just rent a car and they travel. And they know the risks involved. So it's not something that happens very often in Namibia. It's maybe one or two incidences every other month. So I don't think it's a reason for concern.
Okay.
I mean, if you compare that to South Africa and other places where tourists are robbed, almost every day. I think this is not a big concern. It's something that we need to look at, maybe educating tourists more, telling them what the risks are. But at the end of the day, it's a grown-up tourist. If he knows the risk and he still wants to do it, it's up to them. I mean, we can't control all of that.
Yeah. Okay. Sunny, thank you so much for making time for us.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay. Bye. And now we step away, take a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly with yet more news. Stay with us.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The Namibia's Ministry of Agriculture has announced a partial shift on the ban of poultry imports from Brazil. While the suspension remains in place for the state of Rio Grande do Sul due to avian influenza risk, poultry meat from that region packaged before or on April 13, 2025, is now allowed. Importers must apply for new permits and shipments from other HPAI-free Brazilian states that can continue without restrictions. The decision comes after a review of Brazil's veterinary safety measures. The Directorate of Veterinary Services stated that the adjustment balances trade needs with disease control, repealing earlier restrictions of notification number 11 and 12 of 2025. They will continue monitoring the global avian influenza situation and update importers accordingly. Fresh or frozen poultry meat from unaffected Brazilian states remains freely importable, ensuring minimal disruption to supply chains. Now, this move is expected to ease trade tensions and stabilize poultry prices in Namibia, where Brazil is a key supplier. However, consumers may wonder, how are imported products screened for safety? Authorities assure that all shipments must meet strictly biosecurity standards with permits tied to compliance. We've reached out to the public relations officer in the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, Simon Nipandura, on this. Let's take a listen. Good afternoon, Mr. Simon Nipandura, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to you.
The Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform has issued out a notification on the partial resumption of importation and in-transport of live poultry, poultry meat and poultry products from Brazil. Now, why is there a partial ban placed on poultry products from Brazil?
Thank you very much. There was, in fact, but it has been released. The ban was because of the highly pathogenic avian influenza that has broken out in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. So for the purpose of not spreading the viruses or let it entering into our country and affecting our poultry and our poultry market, we usually do issue a ban. However, we have just issued a notice today, I mean yesterday the 25th,
yeah,
on the partial resumption of importation and in transit of live poultry, poultry meat and poultry products from Brazil, specifically from that state.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not the first time that Brazil poultry gets a ban due to avian influenza risks. Now, should Namibia consider shifting from importing from them altogether?
The ban is not banning the whole country, Brazil as a country.
Yeah.
While repeated bans raise a concern, a complete shift away from Brazil poultry import may not be necessary, especially at this stage. The current suspension is a state-specific, not countrywide, and imports from highly pathogenic avian influenza states are still permitted. Brazil remains one of the world's largest poultry exporters with strong veterinary oversight, and a more balanced approach may involve diversity import source while maintaining strict veterinary risk assessments and surveillance, rather than fully discontinuing imports from Brazil.
Yeah.
So it's not the whole country. It's just the whole that state. But this also offers a great opportunity to now our poultry farmers in the country. While we have certain specific bans in place, where the supply from outside becomes less, meaning that we may use now the internal market or the suppliers that are available.
Yeah. Isn't that something perhaps that we can start looking into our local farmers right here in Namibia? Isn't that something that perhaps we should definitely be looking into and also supporting them for them to come up to standard level, so that when things like this actually do happen, we know where to fall back on and eventually rely on local farmers?
That is very much correct. We've got big industry players like the Namibia poultry industry. I mean, we've got quite a number of suppliers of poultry in the country. And as the government, as the ministry, that's what we're hoping for. We're hoping for the country to actually be self-sustaining. Obviously, we cannot exist in isolation. But our core vision is to be self-reliant. And as the President, Her Excellency Dr. Netu Mondaitwa said, by 2030, we should actually cut 80% of import and be producing our own food, poultry included. So that's now an opportunity for our farmers to take up on. It's not a government initiative, but it's a whole country initiative where we meet one another halfway. where government sets the playing field as in the market, then we, the farmers, come on board with the production.
Mm. Now, come 2030, what would that shift look like? Should we cut off from Brazil, importing poultry from Brazil? What would that shift look like for Namibia's economy and bilateral relations with Brazil?
No, we are not cutting off. we are not cutting off as per se. We are just making sure that we are producing our own food in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
But trade with Brazil or any other countries shall still continue because of the demands, the quality, and the preference of the suppliers, of the consumers. So bilateral, we are not, there is no shift from, there's no killing of markets with our bilateral partners.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we is just taking care of our own markets before reaching outside.
Okay. Now, Mr. Simon, products packaged before or on 13 April 2025 are said to be allowed. How do those products meet compliance standards?
Poultry products from Rio de Grande packaged on before the 13th of April 2025 are permitted. This is because they were processed before the disease risk was identified or it has escalated. At that time, the facilities were still considered compliant with veterinary health standards. Such products are assumed to have been produced under the HPAI-free conditions and in accordance with the health and safety protocols monitored by both Namibia and the Namibian authority.
Yeah.
So all those products before entering, they have been screened. They were given permits to enter the country and they should be safe to consume within the borders of Namibia.
Okay. Now, lastly, how are imported products screened for safety overall?
Before importing anything, whether it's plant or plant material, animal material,
mm-hmm.
The issuing country or the country where the client is, the person is exporting from or importing from, needs to provide us a certificate assuring us that this products are disease-free, and these are up to World Organizational Health of Animal Standards, which we all comply to. So imported products are screened through a combination of veterinary certificate, import permits, and border inspection. The Directorate of Veterinary Services requires a valid veterinary health certificate from the exporting country. Import permit specifying the origin and compliance with Namibian regulation, physical and document-based inspection at ports of entry, and then ongoing disease surveillance and monitoring to ensure that the exporting region remains disease-free. This is a multi-layered system that now helps the entry of contaminated or high-risk product into the country.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the measures us as a ministry that takes into account when we import or allow imported products into the country.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, sir, for making time for us right here on the Reader News Bulletin.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Missed part of today's show? Well, catch the replay anytime on the Eagle FM mobile app, available on Android and iOS, or visit eaglefm.com.na for podcasts, interviews, and the latest news.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Olio mnangeshefa no wahara kushigitha oma akuro kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkulu olongaha. ningi kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kon norahita tuimwe heari imwe ne heari imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116 mamberewa kon norahita tu natu bali o heta tu batatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
In other news, the town of Opuwo is once again at the center of economic activity as it hosts the 2025 edition of the Opuwo Annual Trade Fair, a landmark event aimed at promoting regional economic growth, attracting investment, and elevating the visibility of local businesses. This year's fair is being held under the forward-looking theme, empowering the local economy through sustainable innovation in green hydrogen, oil and gas, conservancies for tourism and mining. As one of the most significant trade and cultural gatherings in the Kunene region, the Opuwo Trade Fair serves as a dynamic platform for businesses, entrepreneurs and investors to showcase their products and services. Over 130 exhibitors from Namibia and neighboring countries, including Angola, Kenya and Tanzania, have converged on Opuwo, underscoring the fair's growing regional influence. The 2025 theme aligns with Namibia's national development goals, highlighting sectors identified as key to the country's sustainable future. Alongside the business exhibitions, the fair also features a wide alley of cultural and social events that showcase the region's heritage and vibrant community spirit, highlighting events such as traditional dance performance, local music concerts, a career fair, and sports events such as boxing and horse racing. The fair forms part of Opuwo's broader five-year strategic plan from 2024 to 2029, which aims to transform the town into a regional national hub through digital transformation, local empowerment, and sustainable growth. As Namibia continues to position itself at the intersection of innovation and sustainability, the Opuwo Annual Trade Fair remains a key instrument in turning local ambition into national progress. Let's now take a listen to Prime Minister Elia Ngurayre as he speaks at the event.
To this end, we wish to echo the call by the Opuwo Town Council for the mining industry to consider investing in processing plant in Opuwo. With various mineral resources in the area, we must not continue exporting raw materials only to import them back as finished products. Let us cut and polish our minerals right here in Opuwo, therefore creating jobs, building skills, and growing our industrial base. Moreover, I'm reliably informed that on Thursday, 29 May 2025, there will be a consultative meeting focused on these new industries. I encourage all relevant players to participate in these critical discussions to shape a future that benefits both our communities and our countries. Equally, I note with optimism the government's commitment to the construction of bitumen road to Okangwati in Epupa constituency. Honorable Councillor, where are you? The government is going to pave Okangwati Road, the anticipated Baines hydropower project. These infrastructure investments are not just about mobility. They are laying the foundation for Opuwo to emerge as a hub for economic activity, powering the northwestern corridor of Namibia and southern Africa. Honorable Governor, honorable guests, ladies and gentlemen, let me also add, as we have said in Parliament, from the perspective of drought relief, we have taken a position that right here in Kunene, the food that is distributed for drought relief, we want it to be grown here in Kunene region. And it therefore means from Opuwo to Okangwati, in between there, those fields that we see that produce food, they must be supported and they must be given capacity to be able to produce as well as sell that to the government. Thereby, they will be able to generate some income from that. From Opuo to Etanga, and from Opuo to Sesfontein and elsewhere, let us see our people in Opuo, in Kunene, producing food and therefore sustainably being able to supply or to provide that food for us to buy as OPM. And the youth will be able to get some income and the women will be able to get some income. So, Comrade Governor, this is because it's not campaign, the campaign is over. This is a bread and butter issue. So we want to leave you this as a homework for all of us, as a part course for all of us. Let us go and work on this. And we are giving each other 3 months in which we can try to find a manner in which we must move forward. So you, the youth that are here, NYC and all others, we are giving you this part course and we want you to work on it, sweat on it, so that we are able to implement this particular idea. Honorable guests, as we continue to open new frontiers, let's remain guided by the principles of sustainability, equity, and inclusivity. Our small-scale miners, our farmers, our traders, and our youth all deserve a seat at the table of economic progress. Government remains steadfast in creating conducive environment for all actors to thrive. Team Kunene Region, under your able leadership, Honorable Governor Muharukwa, the Opuo Town Council, under the leadership of Honorable Kasipo Kakonda, Mayor of Opuo, including the other mayor who has the power, Honorable Mbinge, and the organizing team under the Chief Executive Officer, Madam Mashinjara Shihura Katurota, the sponsors and all participants, thank you for your tireless efforts. Honorable Governor, thank you for your leadership. Honorable Maurice Shea, thank you for your always being closer to the region that, as the Governor has said, you have worked together to make it happen. Let's give these two young men a round of applause. Collectively, your dedication is what transforms visions into reality. To the people of Opuo and to the people of Kunene region, your resilience, hospitality, and innovation are commendable. In particular, I want to give an appreciation to our traditional leaders all over Kunene region. Please convey to them our appreciation. The culture and tradition are the roots that will catapult us into action. Please convey to them our most sincere appreciation. Let this year's trade fair be a springboard for new partnership, Comrade Kanjoze. New investments and new ideas that will drive Opuo and Namibia forward. With those few words and many words and the energy displayed by the young people that were singing and the rhino that was dancing, I now have the honor and privilege to declare the 12th edition of the Opuo Annual Trade Fair 2025 officially open.
And now let's speak to the Public Relations Officer of the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform, that is Simon Nipandura. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Yes, it is Simon Nipandura.
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you.
So I understand that the ministry also went out to show its presence at the Opuo Trade Fair. Now tell us what the role of the ministry is there and how is the exhibition actually going?
Yes, the ministry, as per usual, we usually take exhibition shows or trade shows all over the country. This is basically just to take our services closer to our farmers. As you know, we've got various services and certain agricultural development centers or agricultural offices may be far. So we do take part into this initiative just to make sure that we get to engage to our farmers, we explain certain things, we increase certain services. And yeah, and this year we, as with the ministry, has brought in another extension of fisheries. We're also here with the Department of Fisheries here.
Mm-hmm. And I also understand that there are over 130 exhibitors from Namibia and neighboring countries, including Angola, Kenya, Tanzania, have also come to Opuwo. How is that with so many cultural differences? How is that exhibition actually going at the trade fair?
I must say it's quite impressive. It's also my first time here this year. Must say the collaboration or the organization from the Down Council or the organization committee is quite well. We've got diverse businesses, we've got the government, we've got government offices, we've got para-state-owned enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Bank of Namibia also setting up here and explaining various currencies and notes and all banking procedures, do's and do nots.
So
it's quite a beautiful environment. I would like to invite everybody in Opuwo or those close to Opuwo or even those that can make it to Opuwo to come experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, the aim is to transform the town into a regional innovation hub that is through digital transformation, local empowerment, and sustainable growth. How do you think that this will help local farmers, or not even local farmers per se, but local entrepreneurs into turning Opuwo into a regional innovation hub?
I think Opuwo, in my opinion, is actually a town with a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Given the right investments, given the right participation from different businesses or industries. Opuwo could actually be one of the food hubs of the country. It was back then known for livestock production, livestock
mm-hmm.
and beef stock.
Mm-hmm.
We also have got an ocean on the other side. We also have got the Kunene River also on the other side. So the whole combination of the whole technology and culture and setting up probably of agricultural infrastructures. Also, on Thursday, I believe they'll be having my brother Jonah will be joining us here at Opuwo to just talk about green hydrogen also.
Yeah.
It's placed especially in Kunene. So given the right opportunity, it is going to be, it is practical, it is feasible, and let us do so by supporting Opuwo or the Kunene region at large.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mr. Simon, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the radar and also telling us on what actually transpiring at the trade fair, that is Opuwo Trade Fair.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay.
And now with that being said, we step away, take a trip to the marketplace, but we invite you as well to be part of the conversation. That is by dialing our studio number 083-288-401.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077. No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Onkundena ombanawa kani hauto. Owapumbu oshimaliwa meendelelo ndele ouna osheenditho ouna aaniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa ashike mboka yena oondjo dhoye otaya ende kashona ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana AutoCash otayi ningi ompu tu etela ohauto yoye eto pewa epresenda 45 dhongushu yosheenditho shoye muule ashike wominutetilo 45 ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge ostatement yombaanga ohauto yoye ashike mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa tu dhengela nena ko 061 400 6 ano ko 061 400 6 oshipulela ko AutoCash.
Welcome back. My name is Sean Jordan Usip and you're back on The Radar. In further news, we're diving into one of the most transformative shifts in global economics, the rise of a multipolar world. For decades, the US-led Western financial system dominated trade, investment, and development. But now, with the expansion of BRICS, the creation of the new development bank, and growing resistance to dollar dependency, power is fragmenting. What does this mean for smaller economies like Namibia? Could BRICS offer real alternatives to IMF and the World Banking financing? And how does multipolarity change the rules of the game for trade, debt, and sovereignty? To unpack this, we're joined by my colleague Francine Ngela in order to unpack this further. Thank you for being here, Mr. Franz.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, so firstly, the BRICS New Development Bank positions itself as an alternative to the IMF and World Bank. For a country like Namibia, what are the key differences in loan conditions, and could this reduce dependency on Western financial institutions?
Yeah, you see, to a certain extent, yes. But the New Development Bank is not yet at full capacity to be able to challenge the Western financial organization.
Yes.
Like to stand as a muscle against, you know, the Western financial muscles. You see, because the West financial organizations are still big. But what they can do is, you know, they can just cut, you know, the complexity.
Yes.
Of, you know, that comes with, you know, getting financial assistance.
I see.
Yeah, because, in fact, we don't need to underestimate the New Development Bank, but we also don't need to emphasize their greatness yet. But what Namibia could do then, Namibia could sit on two fences.
I see.
Yeah, like leverage both, because these are two competing powers. And what Namibia can do can just sit on the fence so that she doesn't become grass, because these are two elephants that are about to fight.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Namibia can sit on both elephants, you know.
Mm.
For example, we see that Algeria has now joined the New Development, you know, Bank. They are now sort of becoming members, because Algeria is one of the great investment platforms in Africa.
I see.
Yeah, and you see, it's about. It will depend on how Namibia could position itself, you know, given these dynamics.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in your opinion, right, BRICS has expanded to include Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and other countries. What does this mean for its economic influence, and how does Namibia stand to benefit or lose from aligning closer to this bloc?
First of all, we look at BRICS in terms of numbers. If we look at BRICS in terms of numbers, it has already surpassed the numbers of the country, you know, of the so-called Western Bloc.
I see.
Now, you see, when you talk about China and you talk about India, that's almost 3.4 billion people.
Mm.
And you talk about Brazil, Russia, Egypt, and the rest, that altogether is almost a billion people again. So that in itself is a huge It's a huge bargaining chip. As far as economic growth is concerned. And not only that, when you look at the economic muscle right now, BRICS has surpassed the G7 country, the G7 bloc of countries in terms of its, you know, in terms of the GDP of all countries that are members of BRICS combined.
I see.
So looking at that, BRICS then becomes huge. You know, it has potential to become a huge bloc. It's, in fact, the world's largest bloc right now.
I see.
It's the world's largest economic bloc. So it is Namibia. It will depend on how Namibia sees herself and how it will position itself. Because all these countries that have joined, you look at Egypt, you look at Ethiopia, for example. Egypt is the second largest economy in the world, in Africa. You know?
Right.
When we are talking about the advanced economy.
Mm.
Of course, Nigeria is large in terms of GDP, but we are looking at other indicators.
Right.
Egypt and South Africa are the largest economies of Africa. So when you have Egypt and South Africa and Ethiopia, which is Ethiopia, in fact, is one of the countries that are doing well economically. And also when you look at their airways, it's the best airways in Africa.
Right.
And that's an economic muscle on its own. So given this, because for you to be a member of BRICS, excuse me, you need to have something that you're able to offer.
I see.
Yeah, you need to have something on the table that you can offer. So what can you offer? Should Namibia join BRICS now, what is Namibia going to offer? What is their leveraging power? If you look at Brazil, Brazil is the largest economy in Latin America.
Right.
With, in fact, advanced economy, not just large, but it's advanced. So you also look at Venezuela. They also want to join. They also have capacity, though they are having a, you know, internal political crisis.
Right.
Yeah. So you look at Indonesia and you see, you look at other countries that are eyeing to join BRICS. These are big countries, big players. But there are most of these countries that are part of BRICS now, they are also part of the G20.
Right.
So it's a large bloc, and it now depends on how Namibia will position itself and what type of influence does Namibia want to have, or what type of role does Namibia want to play as a member of BRICS.
I see.
But I think we also stand a chance to a certain extent as far as the membership of BRICS and is concerned. Now, the give and take of that is that, you know, Namibia's position of being friend to all and enemy to none.
Right.
That's a better position for Namibia, because joining BRICS to Namibia does not mean is total dismissal of Western economic, you know, partnership. But that just mean, you know, balancing so that you have a variety of choices to make, or, you know, varieties of partnership.
Right.
You can choose. Unlike in those days before, this dynamic, global dynamic shift, you know, you only lean on one block. And that's it. That one block tend to take advantage of you because you have no other alternative. So I think right now we are about to see economic partnership that will be done with mutual respect, because the other party knows that there is this party. Should we misbehave, they will always damn us and go to the next person.
I see. Well, in earlier you had mentioned the shift from the US dominated market to a multipolar market system. So in your opinion, how does this shift impact small economies' bargaining power in trade and investment deals?
Well, you see, when it comes to partnership, it depends on how you negotiate. Your capacity in terms of negotiation is what plays a role, is what makes you great or small.
I see.
In other words, there is no one small yet until we know your power of negotiating. So let me give you an example. For example, let me give you an example of Qatar. Right. Qatar is a very small country.
Mm.
Almost of the same, I think we are more than them in terms of population.
I see.
But they have leveraged, they transformed themselves from just being oil suppliers to being economic players. You know, and they have now made a deal with Trump that is over $5 trillion US dollars in investment.
I see.
And now, given the fact that Trump is also an entrepreneur, I think Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates, these three countries, are no longer these traditional Islamic kingdoms and, you know, what people used to, you know, mockingly call them mosques with, you know, with gas station.
Right.
Yeah, but they have transformed themselves into key economic players that United States of America is now looking at them from, you know, a point of saying that they are equal partners as far as business is concerned. So this is how they have transformed themselves. And all small economies can learn one thing or two from these trio nations.
I see.
You know, how a country can transform itself. That they are now key players. In fact, they are not just key players economically, but they are also key players in shaping the political, you know, sphere of the world. They are trying to host, you know, peace negotiations and so forth. So they are big players, but this comes to understanding oneself as a country and knowing what you want and how you want it. So, and where do you want it and how do you negotiate? Because there was a statement our late president used to say, win-win.
Right.
Yeah, but how win-win? It should not just be a verb, but it should be in practicality. But we see it practically from Qatar and from Saudi Arabia and from United Arab Emirates that they are now investors.
I see.
Most countries, in fact, they are growing very fast. Their economies are growing very fast and they are buying, they are buying the hearts of bigger powers, of big powers. Because in 20 years to come, these three countries might become the financial, you know, the global financial hubs.
Right.
Yeah. So all smaller economies could learn and use what they have to grow their economies and grow. We should not just be uranium suppliers. We should transform ourselves into becoming key global players global players. So that Namibia must invest in the U.S. economy. We shouldn't depend on AGOA, you know, Africa Growth, Opportunity Act. But we should be the ones to say we want to invest in the U.S. economy.
All right, Mr. Franz, apologies for the interruption, but we are going to a scheduled commercial break. Please do stay tuned with us on the radar. Don't go anywhere.
kids, no running. They grow up so fast.
Come here, guys. Who wants to watch the favorite show on GoTV?
Your family's favorite moments are made better with GoTV's shows. We've got loads of local, international, and kids' channels, and all the football you need from the comfort of your home.
You can also watch your favorite shows wherever you are with GoTV Stream. Stick with GoTV and let's go together. GoTV. Love it.
Yes, welcome back to On the Radar. We're still sitting here with Mr. Francine Ngela, my colleague, and we're discussing the move of the global economic markets from a unipolarity to a multipolarity. So, Mr. Franz, one of the key controlling financial systems that the US and the EU still have is the SWIFT code system. Can you give us a brief explanation of what that is, and can you explain how this can derail the challenge of unipolarity?
Yeah, no, in simpler terms, the SWIFT code is a messaging system. The international messaging system. Like if you are transferring money from one country to the other country is informed immediately that there's money coming in from this bank. So it's a transaction system that makes it quicker for one to receive money between countries. And this is a system that is built by the United States.
Right.
And of course the European Union, since they are allied with the United States, they also use it. But should there be a problem between the United States and Europe, Europe could also be switched off from SWIFT, because the country that controls the SWIFT is the United States. And in fact, this whole trade system, the entire world trade system is established by the United States. So now, having said that, I can take you back to 2022 on the 24th of February, when Russia attacked Ukraine, that Russia was removed. The Russian banking systems were removed from the SWIFT, the international SWIFT code. So right now, for a few days and months, it became very difficult for you to transfer money from anywhere into Russian banks. You have to use third party countries to do that. But of course the Russians found a way. They have their own messaging app between the Chinese and the Russians and the Iranians and the Indians. So they are now trying to establish their own, SWIFT, like an option, SWIFT system of their own. But as we speak now, no country yet has reached that point. Not even the Chinese have done that.
I see.
So that is how much of a derailment that lack of SWIFT system could be, to any other alternative apart from Western, global financial system. So that's where we stand. That's why I'm saying the Western global financial systems are still a big name. And we will make a mistake by thinking that there is an option or an alternative right now.
All right. Finally, looking ahead, is multipolarity a net positive for Namibia's development, or does fragmentation bring more instability than opportunity?
I think fragmentation, because, most those people that don't know where we come from, we first came from a bipolarity, and then we entered into a unipolarity, and now we are into multipolarity. So, but, this fragmentation gives countries an alternative, like a freedom to make choices and to make friendship. Because nobody now, right now, could threaten a country, unilaterally, like what the US used to do in the 90s, that they were the ones that were strong and they could unilaterally threaten anybody because the Soviets have collapsed. But that is a story of the past because the United Nations, the United States is no longer militarily strong to that point that it can make unilateral decisions and to threaten countries. There are now other players that could equally challenge the United States' power and dominance. So this in itself is an opportunity for countries to leverage this type of world system in making economic, you know, partnership with other players that are coming on board. For example, China is the second largest economy, which can challenge the United States in any sphere, whether it is engineering, technology, or education, in any sphere, the Chinese are able to challenge the United States.
Right.
So that in itself gives smaller countries like ourselves an opportunity to look into both and say, we need both partners. And this now will sort of send a signal to the United States and Western countries to say, look, our time to lecture and to dictate is over. If this is a time now for us to establish friendship with based on mutual respect.
Exactly.
So I think to me, I see more opportunities, than of course the negative that comes with it, but there are more opportunities depending on how countries align themselves.
I see. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you very much and have a good day.
All right. Headlines at your fingertips. Join the Village's official WhatsApp channel for real-time news alerts, top stories, and breaking updates. No clutter, just news that matters. Subscribe today. It's free. Well, join us after a trip to the marketplace.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Welcome back. There you had it from my colleague Francine Angela and Sean Jordan Wisab. And now we turn over to trading economics on what's making headlines in today's economic indicators. On agricultural commodities today, the top commodity losers are wheat at -1.26% and gains are led by rubber at 0.83%. With metal commodities, the top commodity losers are copper at -1.50%, gold at -1.17%, and silver at -0.98%. Energy commodities are natural gas are leading with being the top commodity loser at -1.09%, natural gas AU Dutch at -0.75%, crude oil WTI at -0.38%, and Brent crude oil at -0.12%. Now, Frankfurt's DAX rose to 0.5% toward the 24,145 mark, moving closer to new highs and extending yesterday's gains buoyed by relief over the US-EU tariff delay. Still, investor sentiment remains cautious amid continued uncertainty surrounding President Trump's unpredicted policy move. On the domestic data front, Germany's GFK consumer confidence improved, though less than expected. The UK 10-year gilt yield dropped to 4.63%, the lowest in over 2 weeks as global bonds rallied. Now, this came after Japan signaled efforts to stabilize its bond market following weeks of rising yields. Japan's finance ministry consulted investors on how much government debt should be issued after recent market weakness. Sweden's business confidence slipped to 98.9 in May 2025 from a downwardly revised 99.8 in April, though it still reflects a broadly normal sentiment. Companies in most sectors viewed demand -27 versus 29 as weaker than usual, except in construction, where it remains close to the historical average. The Japanese yen weakened toward 144 per dollar on Tuesday, retreating sharply from a four-week high as domestic bond yields declined following reports that the government plans to reduce issuance of super long bonds to curb rising yields. The move also led to a broader drop in U.S. Treasury yields, while the dollar regained some strength. Japanese Ministry of Finance is reportedly considering revising its bond issuance strategy for the current fiscal year, including potential cuts to 20 and 40-year debt supply. We now pause here, and when we're back, we'll take you to news beyond the borders. To stay with us.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Even a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now for news beyond the borders, we're starting off in South Africa, whereby President Cyril Ramaphosa says good infrastructure will boost trade and reduce business costs.
From our own government here and deputy ministers, premiers and MECs from our various provinces, and ministers and officials and deputy ministers from various countries across the continent. We're rather pleased to see a galaxy of ministers from right across not only our sub-region, but also ministers from other African sister countries across our continent. Distinguished guests and officials, and of course I shouldn't forget Ms. Mametsi Masemola, who is the real engine of Infrastructure South Africa. And she was telling me that she does all the work. The minister and deputy minister take the glory. Let me also extend my greetings to representatives of business and labor who are here. I'm told that today we have, or this year rather, we have been a greater number of people who have come. And as I look across, I just see a clear representation of money, that people with money are here. So I'm going to speak proper English. So when I came in, I saw the room going a bit dark. They darkened the room. And for a moment, I wondered, what is this? It's happening to me again. Because at that moment, we were seated very nicely, and I was beginning to get into a groove of, you know, interacting with this man. And I suddenly hear him say, no, dim the lights. Hosiantsu Ramakgopa was still working in the presidency, and we conceptualized Infrastructure South Africa. And today he's a big noise, he's a big minister, but he has left his footprint. And I'm rather glad that it has really mutated and fallen into really good hands. In many ways, this is a moment that I believe is filled with great promise and endless opportunities for infrastructure development in our country. And this I say advisedly, as I look at the number of people who have come through, much more than what we have had in the past. And earlier this year, one industry publication said the country is ready to unleash an infrastructure boom. And that, in my view, was quite telling. As we gather at this symposium this year, after last year, it is important for us to fully understand the important role that is played by infrastructure in the life of a nation, particularly our South African nation. This is so because infrastructure is in the end fundamental to the development of our country. It serves as the backbone of economic growth and social progress, and also contributes to the improvement of the life of our ordinary people. I have often said that infrastructure is the flywheel that our economy needs to boost growth and to create jobs. A flywheel is that important part of the engine that really gets the engine to propel and to move. It also.
Infrastructure underpins economic development, as Zambian Minister Dr. Gabriel Poland says.
Infrastructure Symposium aims to foster regional cooperation and integration for the development of the African continent. And of course, increased investment in infrastructure could go a long way in boosting jobs in South Africa. Our colleague Katlego Legodi is in Cape Town for us, and he's been observing proceedings there. Very good afternoon to you, Katlego. So we've heard what the president had to say about it, and a critical building block for economic growth. Over to you.
A very good afternoon to you, Nompu, and to our viewers at home. President Cyril Ramaphosa indeed describing this as a moment of great promise in terms of all of the developments around Infrastructure South Africa and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. So more or less, more than most of those role players just coming into the symposium here to listen to the president in terms of these promises, but also what was notable there, Nompu, was him just releasing this book, this infrastructure book, but also at the same time giving us a sense of reforms that are underway that will ensure and push for these projects to see their fruition. Most of the role players here are just looking and listening into how then these projects are going to be funded, what would be envisioned in terms of development, and how they could be sustainable as well. I'm going to bring into the conversation now, take you deep into Africa. We'll start in Zambia this afternoon and speak to Minister Gabriel Poland, who'll just give us a sense of really the president as reflection here and tying it to the plans that you have there in Zambia, and also looking at some of the issues that were canvassed at the forums meeting, whereby as 14 ministers from the continent were in attendance. Let's reflect.
I mean, that was really fantastic listening to President Cyril Ramaphosa basically emphasizing the preeminence of African unity in terms of infrastructure development and focusing on infrastructure that actually helps the continent comes together. As you are aware, our own president, President Hakainde Hichilema, has been very emphatic in his speeches in showcasing and demonstrating that Zambia is pivotal to African developmentalism, given its strategic location right in the center of Southern Africa. And what we see from our investments, for example, is that, for example, the Lobito Corridor where we have connectivity all the way to the west, which diversifies trade routes for the continent. We have Tazara, we have Tazama, and the president has really, really made an important point there, basically demonstrating and illustrating the importance of infrastructure development. Infrastructure underpins economic development, infrastructure drives economic development, and it's important for us to recognize that infrastructure plays a crucial role.
So looking at also some of the plans that are underway in Zambia, how do we tie it to what the president has promised? For instance, he spoke about the Libido infrastructure project that will tie and more or less connect all of these countries. How do we see some of the projects that you have as well just tying into what South Africa is doing here?
I mean, they're fantastic, ambitious projects in Zambia, very, very well connected to the rest of the region. For example, in energy, in mining, and just in transport and logistics. And what the Lobito Corridor is going to do is to demonstrate the capacity of the region to come together to the rest of the world. And when we come together, what can we achieve as a region? So we see substantial infrastructure investments that are going to go in that arena. Now, what that would do is that it would develop the mining sector, connect the rest of the country to the rest of the world through its relations within the context of the region.
All right.
In further news, Africa pushes to process raw materials for economic growth.
Africa holds over 30% of the world's strategic raw materials, from cobalt and lithium to cocoa and rare earths. But most are exported without processing, costing the continent jobs and revenue. The 2025 African Raw Materials Summit drew over 1,000 delegates from 75 countries. Policymakers, investors, and experts focused on solutions.
This summit is our moment where Africa reclaims its narrative, redefines its destiny, and rededicates itself to transforming raw wealth into real wealth from the soil beneath our feet through the genius within our people.
Nigeria is leading with a draft law mandating 30% local processing before exports. Officials say it aligns with ECOWAS and AFCFTA's rules and could shift Africa's resource model.
We've got enormous potentials as a people and as a continent, but to what purpose are we putting those potentials in?
The value loss is clear. Ghana supplies nearly half the world's cocoa, but earns under 2% from chocolate sales. In Congo, most cobalt is mined locally, but refined abroad. Experts say fixing this needs investment in tech, logistics, and infrastructure.
It is significant to emphasize the value addition is not optional. It is essential. It is the engine of youth empowerment, SME growth, and economic sovereignty.
For Nigeria to be able to harness its raw wealth sitting on the ground, there's a fair amount of work that needs to be done in putting in place the right legal and regulatory framework.
Delegates also highlighted digital tools like Nigeria's raw material mapping system to guide investments and track supply chains. For many, the summit marks a shift from extraction to transformation. With strong leadership and smart partnership, Africa's raw wealth could finally power real industrial change. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Kenya plans to divest additional shares in telecom giant Safaricom to raise $1.1 billion to partly finance the 25-26 budget.
Let's start in East Africa. Kenya's government could potentially offload more of its stake in the telecom service provider Safaricom. The government is looking to raise at least $1.2 billion in the 2025-2026 fiscal year through the sale of stakes in companies it has a share in. The government currently owns 35% of the operator after it sold a 25% stake in it through an initial public offering in 2008. The South African grocery group Pick n Pay has recorded a narrower 4-year loss before tax, reflecting a lower trading loss in its core supermarket business. Losses before taxes and capital items came in at 13.3 million in the 52 weeks ending on the 2nd of March, compared to a loss of $78 million the prior year. The full year trading loss in its core Pick and Pay business narrowed by $56 million. Now, overall group turnover was up by nearly 6% to $6.64 billion, buoyed by 13.2% growth in the discount grocery chain Boxer and a 1.9% growth from its Pick and Pay business. The group further adds that it anticipates the Pick and Pay core business to break even on a trading profit for lease interest basis in the fiscal year 2028.
Uganda is advancing towards energy independence with the Lake Albert oil project, set to produce its own liquefied petroleum gas. Experts highlight this as a pivotal step towards cleaner energy for households, reducing the nation's reliance on wood, fuel, and fostering sustainable development.
Liquefied petroleum gas, or LPG, is a type of hydrocarbon gas that is obtained by refining crude oil or processing natural gas. Its development in Uganda is being widely seen as a major boost for the country's oil and gas industry. The Ministry of Energy says production in the refinery and pipeline are more than 60% complete, and oil production will begin by June of next year. The East African country imports most of its LPG, but expects that to stop in the coming years. Not only that, Uganda also hopes to become a regional LPG exporter when oil production picks up further.
From Kingfisher, we'll have about, at peak, about 20,000 tons per year. And then in Tilenga, it will be about 80,000 tons. And remember, our consumption is just about 35,000 tons per year at the moment, going 40,000, okay, we'll see. So if it was to be produced right now, we would be having excess LPG, and we'd definitely export to the neighboring countries.
The surge in local gas output is expected to cut prices and more than double domestic use, ending reliance from China, India and the UAE, making the switch to clean energy smoother. While LPG is derived from fossil fuels, it's seen as a more environmentally friendly compared to coal, oil or wood fuel. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN, Kampala, Uganda.
The Islamic Development Bank has signed 70 agreements over $5 billion US dollars with member states in Africa and Asia.
Now, the bank's mission is to expand access to Sharia-compliant financial services across the world. Officials say they've been seeing a fair bit of growing appetite for some of its products in China, especially Sukuk issuances. Since its inception in the 1970s, the bank has approved around $200 billion worth of loans to 57 member states. For more on its impact here on the African continent, CGTN's Adel Mahruki spoke to the group chairman, Dr. Mohamed Al-Jasser.
It is a landmark date for us. 50 years of operation in our 57 member countries deserves a golden jubilee celebration. So we take stock of what have we done. What did we do? Over the years, we did more than $200 billion of financing of projects. More than 13,000 projects have been financed. So we have been extremely busy over the past 50 years. And now we celebrate our achievements of the last 50 years, but also chart our path for the next 50 years, inshallah.
How does the new 10-year strategy for the ISDB group, will help in evolving its practices?
Well, as you know, the global economy now is going through a lot of turbulences, and our member countries are not that able to cope with all of these changes. So we are working on the...
Good afternoon, Paula. This is On the Radar.
How are you?
Good, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm on air.
Yes, you're on air.
All right, I just wanted to find out what frequency do you pick up your radio at this side of Muhuru Bombash?
Please do repeat that, sir.
I'm asking what the frequency you can catch up with your radio at Muhuru Bombash.
Okay, frequencies at some areas are down, but you can actually consider downloading the Eagle FM app. That is, if you have an Android on your, and Android app.
Okay, what
or Google Play, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Come again?
You can consider downloading the Eagle FM app or listen via our website, Eagle FM website.
No, what about the connection from the radio?
Well, the frequencies are down at some parts, so hence why we'll recommend the app at this point while we wait for that to be sorted out.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The resilience of our economies to try to help them navigate through all these turbulent waters. This is very important, and that's why we have created arrangements for the COVID, $5 billion, and another arrangement for food shortages after the Ukraine problem, about $10.5 billion. And then with the climate difficulties that happened, we also put a package of about $24 billion with the Arab Coordination Group lending institutions. So we spend a lot of time trying to see what are the most pressing problems facing our member countries, and we go out and help them. The only thing that is very important across the field is that it will enhance the infrastructure of those countries, because we know development is very dependent on a good infrastructure, because we have seen countries where one region is producing a lot of food and it's rotting in the fields, while another region in the same country is starving for lack of food. Why? Maybe just because there is no road to connect those two. So a road in that case is a very vital investment for that country, and we pay attention to these types of problems.
There's no doubt that local.
And with that, we thank you so much for joining us today. That was on the News Radar on the 27th of May, 2025. And from everyone in studio, thank you very much and have a blessed day.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Olio mnageshefa ni wahara kushigitha oma akuro ye kupitira muhuriki radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ningi kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mamberewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali o hetatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM,
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.